Preserve me, O God, for in you I take refuge. The sorrows of those who run after another god shall multiply. Their drink offerings of blood I will not pour out, or take their names on my lips. The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my whole being rejoices. My flesh also dwells secure. For you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, nor let your Holy One see corruption. You make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand there are pleasures forevermore. Selected verses from Psalm 16. It's clear right off the bat that the writer of this psalm is in the danger of facing death, in the danger of some grave and truly physical distress. Preserve me, O God, for in you I take refuge. What was that threat? We don't know specifically. There are no hints as to what the context of this psalm was, or whether it is David facing Saul, David facing Absalom, David facing the nations. But what's just as important as this unnamed danger, which you can then readily apply to whatever distress and tribulation you face, so also is the confidence of the prayer. There is no real trace of bitter complaint or gloomy conflict. It's a cry for help. A cry for help that then is swallowed up by an overpowering hope in the knowledge of the promises of God to the one who prays the psalm. But this trust and these promises are also founded on the belief that the false gods of the world, the other names by which one would seek to find a god or even claim to worship the god, but doing so apart from the words of that god given to the Hebrew people, Moses, David, and then Jesus. Well, all of that is false. And you hear the reference to the drink offerings of blood. This is dealing with the pagan sacrifices, right? That could have been a chicken or a cow. You cut it up, you pour it out, and you offer that blood as sacrifice. Sometimes you would drink it. Oftentimes, this leads to human sacrifice. The one who prays this psalm wants nothing to do with any of that. The soft or the hard. The murder or simply the blaspheme. The Lord, Yahweh, God, the real God by name, is the chosen portion, the cup, the one who holds the lot, the one who holds the fate, the one who can answer the prayer, preserve me, O God. Isn't it interesting that this psalm is also the one that is quoted by St. Peter in that great Pentecost sermon, in which he is preaching to the thousands of Hebrews from all over the Mediterranean and every tongue about the wonders of God, which they consider to be drunken speaking, which is really, you would almost have to be drunk to believe in something like a resurrection from the dead by a man who you'd all just seen crucified. Peter is proclaiming this as a fact, not a drunken stupor, but instead the fulfillment of all prophecy, and he refers to this psalm and David, whose tomb they can all see, just right over there, right over the hill. The king whose bones have lain there for hundreds of years. The king who wrote that God would not abandon his soul, nephesh in the Hebrew, not just spirit here. We're talking the entire life. The word includes your body in it. He would not abandon him to Sheol, the grave, the pit, or let him, as the anointed king, see corruption. And yet there he lies. There he is. What does it mean, Hebrew peoples? That this great prophet of ours, this great king of ours, said he had a promise from God that he would never die or stay dead so great that in the midst of whatever chaos he would face, he could with confidence turn to his God and say, preserve me. I take refuge in you. You make known to me the path of life. I got fullness of joy in you. You hold my lot. The lines have fallen in pleasant places. Nothing can stop me. What does it mean that he now lies there dead and his bones have indeed seen corruption? But that, as Peter says, David being therefore a prophet and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him that he would set one of his descendants on his throne, foresaw and spoke about the resurrection of the Christ. That it was he, the Christ, the son of David, the heir to his throne, not Solomon, but Jesus, who was not abandoned to Hades, nor did his flesh see corruption. This Jesus, God resurrected. And of that, Peter says, we all, that is, those who had the burning, flaming tongues on their head and the language of humanity across the world coming out of their mouth of this resurrection, we are all witnesses, martyrs, testifiers, those who have seen, those who would rather die than say it is untrue. Which means, as always, then, that this psalm is not really David's. This is Jesus' prayer. Jesus, the man. God, yes, that too, but also man, fully human. Hanging, suspended above the earth, nailed to a piece of wood. Says, preserve me, O God. For in you I take refuge. Even as the sorrows of those who think they chase happiness by murdering me are multiplied by them as they pour out my blood as an offering, shouting, let his blood be upon their children, and knowing not what they do. Jesus says to his Father, the lines have fallen from you to me in pleasant places. I have a beautiful inheritance, and this is where you come into the psalm. For you, Christian, are Jesus' beautiful inheritance, the one whom the Father has given to him, of whom he will not lose one. You are the beautiful inheritance that makes Jesus' heart glad. You are the joy that was set before him. For what reason he endured the cross and scorned its shame, that he might nail your debts into your grave, but not leave your body there either. Not abandoning you to Sheol, even though you die, yet you will live. And living or dying, looking for that coming great day when the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting will be made sight. So that no matter what you face today, tomorrow, you also might pray, preserve me, O God, for in you I take refuge, knowing in full confidence that because Jesus has set the Father always before him, in his work to save you, he will never be shaken.